Kamenetsky Brothers Podcast. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. It is ESPN LA and all that. It's Friday also, the
31st would be a Thursday.
It is the 31st of Thursday, which is a Thursday.
I think you just called this the 31st of Thursday. It's actually the 31st of May.
Hold on. I can independently verify that both of those things are true. I'm looking at my calendar. Mm-hmm. It is, in fact, the 31st of May, mm-hmm. and Thursday is not a month.
No.
All right.
All right.
We do real journalism here.
Yeah.
So the finals start tonight, Andy. And
us and Ben Dietrich. We do right. all the important journalism. And we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that because, by the way, that story is bananas.
So we'll talk about that. And I think if you combine the work that Ben and you and I have done over the last couple days, it's pretty substantial.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll do that. LiAngelo Ball was in the Lakers facility working out.
Yeah, we were both there.
We'll tell you how that went and whether or not he's going to be a Laker. Spoiler alert, no. But the fact that he was there is kind of interesting and is worth some conversation. I think, and we'll answer some questions. Some people were talking to us, and we have some questions that we will try to answer at the end of the show. But let's talk about the finals. And
begins today.
Yes, let's get the easy part out of the way. Most people, Vegas on down, think the Cavs have basically no realistic chance of winning this series. Andy Kamenetsky, do you agree?
It certainly feels that way. I mean, look, the flip side of this is I had been on record constantly since like January saying there was no way LeBron was getting out of the East.
Yes.
And here we are. So in that sense, he keeps defying the odds. If you really want to put this in terms of he just has to beat the Warriors like every other day, like don't think about it four times, just every other game. Like he has to win game one.
Right. I was about to say, math only works right. if he wins game
you
one.
Win game one, and this is the one to go after because Andre Iguodala won't be playing in this game, and we'll get into it, is that that's actually important.
Yes.
You know, whether or not it's going to swing a series depending on Iguodala's availability
might
be a little much, but Iguodala is important.
It matters.
If you win game one, then it just turns into you just have to beat the Warriors every other game.
Not so hard.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
I don't think so.
No.
I give him like a 15% chance of winning or something. Like this assumes that like Steph doesn't roll an ankle and Klay doesn't get hit by a bus or something like that. Guys don't decide not to show up. Assuming an intact Golden State team, even with Kevin Love back, they're just way better.
Yes.
And this is what I think is fascinating about this series is, and the playoffs generally is, it's not so much what this is going to look like. And I'm more interested in seeing this just because LeBron beating Golden State to me, as unlikely as I think it is so remarkable that I'd rather see him try than see Boston try. Like I found that to be less interesting.
Yeah, I can see that.
Neither thing is likely to happen.
Right.
Boston wasn't likely to win either.
The flip side of it would be just you get to see something new.
Yeah.
But and there's a certain anticlimactic nature to this because if it really feels like the odds of that happening are so low that you can kind of picture and predict exactly how he's eventually going to lose in five or six games.
Right, so like Boston would lose in five games.
Then in that
in a
sense, to
way.
Me, like it's more potentially curious than actually like potentially entertaining. But we'll see.
Either way, I don't think either team would have been likely to be what would be considered classically entertaining.
Like in a lot of ways, this feels more like a potential blood sport than a basketball.
Right. It's
just game.
It's one of these things where if the remarkable thing happens. It is so remarkable that I will be happy to have seen it as opposed to the other thing.
If this happens, I'm not a basketball expert. I'm not like a historian, but certainly modern NBA history, I think I know reasonably well.
Greatest upset of all time in the NBA, I think, in the NBA final.
Certainly the last 30 to 40 years.
The odds of this one
easily
are longer than the 2007 team that LeBron dragged ass to the finals too. I mean, like, and that team wasn't good.
No.
And this one is considered by Vegas to be relative to the opponent worse. And the opponent that first time was pretty good.
Yes.
The Spurs
the
was
San Antonio
good.
Team that kept winning every other year.
Right. And so what's fascinating to me about it is the path that we got here, and then what happened, like what would have happened if Houston won? Does it matter if Cleveland wins? Because obviously, Andy, everything we do is seen through the prism of how does it affect this summer? And I was of the mind that if Houston had managed to beat Golden State, and they got pretty damn close.
Yes, they did. Yes,
27 straight missed three-pointers.
It's unbelievable. I mean,
they couldn't
and a
do
lot
that
of those,
if they tried.
A lot of those were wide open.
Open. Yes. I mean, I was sat there and all the analysis, you have to start going to, first of all, they did actually attack the rim. When they weren't shooting threes, they were getting to the rack. But you can't, you need the space, like the lion in the movie. Otherwise, it doesn't work. And so you have to take those
creature
shots.
Creature comforts.
Yes.
Just make sure people know
the
where you're
space. you have to take those shots. This is professional basketball. You just expect at some point two of them will go in.
It's unbelievable.
Something. So I didn't have a problem with how they did that. But if Houston had won, does Golden State decide, oh, okay, well, we don't want to sink $1 billion into this team going forward? Or do they get over some of the complacency and basically come back next year and maybe for 2 years and completely torch the league? I tend to think it was the latter more than the former. So in some ways, Houston probably never gets this close again.
I mean, maybe, depends on what happens this summer.
That happens this summer, I guess, if they get LeBron.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talk. Even if they don't get LeBron, getting someone.
Maybe. But like, let's just say this Houston team, as constructed, probably doesn't get this close ever again. So it's sad for them. It's probably better for the rest of the league that Golden State got by and now can play an imperfect finals against a pretty ordinary Cleveland team, save LeBron, and come back next year without having to have changed their habits. So if you're an up-and-coming team trying to, you know, knock this group off next year, as the Lakers in theory could be, depending on how free agency goes, this is probably the result you wanted.
Yeah, and then speaking of that free agency, the other side of it, you know, with Cleveland and LeBron linked to everybody, like it's because LeBron has literally every single option, you know, available to him because nobody's going to say no to LeBron. LeBron can make mountains move as far as the rosters that he wants or whatever.
Daryl Morey's got a plan. The Houston thing, for example, is something that people go, how exactly is that going to work? Daryl Morey has 10,000 scenarios.
Yeah, I mean, every single team in the league, including the one that he's currently on, will move heaven and earth to keep LeBron happy. So because of that, when you can do whatever you want, like the idea of I could see LeBron staying in Cleveland if his team gets waxed. I could see LeBron leaving Cleveland if they gets waxed. I could see him staying if they win a championship. I could see him leaving.
I don't think the results of this series have any impact.
But that's what makes
whatsoever.
It so fascinating. That's what makes it really, in that sense, sort of the, I don't know, the storyline within the game. Like, people are going to be trying to read tea leaves based on every single game, every single quarter, and I think they're all just screaming
just
into
because,
the wind.
Right,
I don't think they know what they're talking
the
about.
The reality of it is even if Cleveland manages to pull this off, first of all, this you want to leave the ultimate mic drop moment. I mean, I, LeBron James, just beat the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, I don't know.
Again.
Right. And you know what? Because of that, now twice Cleveland – I don't owe you mother bleepers anything else for the rest of my life.
I don't think Cleveland, if he left after winning another title again, like over that team, nobody would begrudge
him.
No,
of course not.
But I mean, but the point I was getting at is, even if he does it, it doesn't change the fundamentals of what this Cleveland team will be.
Which is why he could win and still
leave. Exactly. That's my
point. It's crazy.
Where I do think it mattered.
But he
though,
also might say, you know what? We just won a championship. I don't want to walk away from a team that just won. We'll figure it out. Look at what just happened
this year. It comes down to I want to stay in Cleveland. I don't want to stay in Cleveland.
Yeah.
I think this team can build in the way that I want it to build and be competitive in the way that – or I don't. Houston, I think it was an interesting thing because let's say Houston gets to the finals. Presumably they would have won. Would they bust up that team to bring in LeBron and, you know, and if they won a title? And then would LeBron go join a team that just won? Would he do the Kevin Durant?
Right.
Essentially. I don't know. But that becomes the politics of that become much more difficult to kind of diagnose. Whereas now Houston can be like, look, we came short again. Whether it's Chris Paul is going to need more help, we need a third star, whatever it is. Clearly the formula we have doesn't work. LeBron can join that group and still have to overcome the Warriors without having to suffer the KD narrative. And so Houston remains live in ways that they may not have before. Philly, let's hold on for a second because that gets to the Colangelo stuff. So let's wait. But I think LeBron can decide where he wants to go after the finals is over because he doesn't need to have made a choice because the groundwork for anything he wants to do has already been laid. His people know exactly what will happen if he comes to LA, what they'll request in terms of trades, who's going to go where, and all that stuff. If he's going to Houston, he can have five plans laid out. He can put deposits down on five different private schools. He can do all these things, houses. He's a billionaire. He can do whatever he wants, and he has the influence to get the league to do what he wants. Now Golden State is sort of made for next year. They're not going to bust up this team if they win.
No.
So, you know, we're kind of looking at that part of it stays stable, and it just gets to where's LeBron's going to go. So we're back to where we started in a lot of ways.
I was thinking about with this series, like, because the odds of the Cavaliers actually winning this thing, LeBron leading this group.
It's not even worth doing the hypothetically for an extended time.
But I feel like if LeBron could just push this thing to seven games, it to seven, like that to me, I mean, it's not the same thing as winning a championship. These are grown-ass adults. But it is damn near as respectable if you can push this thing to seven games.
Because the only way it happens is if he's averaging
38,
it's 11, and 12.
It's like when Rocky makes the goal of, I just want to go to the distance with Creed. He's like, I'm not as good as this guy. I can't beat him. But I just want to go all 12 rounds. Nobody's ever done that before. Like LeBron going seven games with this team. It will be interesting,
just
though.
Speaking
of going seven games, they got to capitalize on Iguodala being out. I saw something pretty interesting on a stat from Sports Illustrated. Golden State, over the course of the last three finals, plus 141 when Iguodala's on the court, minus 68 when he's out.
He
matters a lot, particularly when you're talking about a matchup with LeBron.
Yeah, he matters.
On both sides of the ball, he matters. But, I mean, Iguodala being out, if nothing else, gives Cleveland a bit of an opening to win this first game.
There's a window there. Hopefully it's competitive. I'd like to see it be competitive. I want to watch LeBron. I want to see what he does. Philadelphia was leading the odds, the Vegas odds of the LeBron James destinations this week. Before,
was he really?
Yes, he was.
Philadelphia actually.
Philly was.
Last I saw was Cleveland. Philly jumped Cleveland. Interesting.
It went Philly, Cleveland, Houston. I don't have it in front of me. I probably should, but I don't.
And then the Lakers.
I could pause. And then the Lakers.
Okay.
But it's something like that. But Philly was in front. Wow. At least by this one odds maker.
Wow.
Then the Brian Colangelo story hit. And without relaying the whole thing, I mean, if you haven't read it, in exhaustive detail, Ben Dietrich at the Ringer.
You sound like mom.
Mom at the Facebook. Are you guys on the Twitter? Ben Dietrich at the Ringer.
Mom, by the way, recently emailed both of us, letting us know she just heard that Dennis Rodman lives in Newport Beach. Like, I don't know what to do with this with this email.
Look him up? I mean,
I didn't even respond. I didn't know what to do with that.
Does he hang with Kobe? I don't know. If you missed the news in exhaustive detail, there are five burner Twitter accounts, which for people now is basically the account you use on Twitter to respond to people in a voice that isn't theoretically your own, in a hidden identity.
To lurk and to respond.
Right, as opposed to a burner phone that you use to have an affair, slightly different.
Or criminality. Let's not leave that out.
That's true. But unpacking all of these things, Colangelo has admitted that he has that one of those things are linked. One of the accounts was linked to him. And it's one that actually is fairly common where you set up an account. You're just following people so you can have everything consolidated in one place. But he wasn't using it to respond. These other accounts, though, had responses and things that were at times giving away really sensitive medical information about players like Julian Okafor and failed physicals and things like that. Had non-kind things to say about some of his own players, like Joel Embiid, Markelle Fultz, up and down, just all kinds of crazy stuff, and a lot of stuff that was, shockingly, negative towards Sam Hinkie, and also, shockingly, very defensive towards the current Colangelo regime.
Oh, and also, too, negative against Masai Ujiri.
Yes.
Over with the Toronto Raptors, who replaced Brian Colangelo,
right,
and running the team. It's nuts. And now, you know, the Twitter detectives are out in full force, and there is talk that actually the person, because I keep saying Jerry Colangelo.
Brian Colangelo.
By the way, we'll get into this. The fact that I keep saying Jerry Colangelo probably speaks to why Brian Colangelo is so damn sensitive in the first place, that I keep saying Jerry.
Yeah.
But the Twitter detectives are out there, and there's been some potential discovery that these Twitter accounts are actually linked to Brian Colangelo's wife.
Right. So three,
and that she actually could be the one responding, or she may have just been the one who set these things up.
There are three. There are basically what people believe at this point are three scenarios. They're all amazeballs.
And they're all terrible for the Colangelos.
They're bad. Well, actually, one isn't that bad for the Colangelos, but two of them definitely are. One of them isn't, but the third one, which I'll get to in a second, is so fascinating that I'm willing to have this guy go through all this grief. Scenario number one is that essentially Brian Colangelo set these things up and he's been running them and whatever, and he's the guy who most of the time, at least, has been doing the responding. This is bad.
Yes, it is.
Because, you know,
that is without question a fireable offense.
Yes. Second one is some combination, as you talk about, Andy, of Colangelo and his wife, my wife, are responsible for the tweets.
That's and Mrs. Is, Eric Jr. to you.
Right. That is not necessarily as bad for Brian Colangelo in some ways, worse in other ways, but just as fascinating in almost every way. Hold on.
Okay.
Right.
All right. See where you're going with this.
The third scenario, which is to some degree the one that Brian Colangelo has been running with, which is some way, somehow, I'm kind of being set up here. In which case, maybe it's by a, you know, because Brian Colangelo isn't universally loved in Philly. In
no.
Because he, you know.
Well, he's not universally loved
by anywhere.
I was going to say, in that world, he's not a popular guy. As is my understanding.
As you can tell by the fact that, you know, even guys like Danny Ainge, you know, Maury Cuban, a lot of people are throwing shade at this or making jokes, making light. And usually people, you know, coaches don't rip other coaches. GMs don't rip other GMs.
It is my understanding. I mean, you and I are not sourced to that degree that we know all the GMs around the league. Is my understanding he is not popular.
So the third scenario is he's being set up in what would be the most amazing and meticulous long con in social media history. Like, this has been going, like, you would have to cultivate this over the course of literally years, in ways that I can't believe are true, but if they are, who's that guy?
Okay, you know,
like,
what?
I want to know that story. As much as I want to know
course.
The Colangelo
Look, I mean,
thing.
If that's actually been happening, then obviously you want to see
who's that guy.
Who would actually take it upon themselves. You know what? I mean, basically what that guy is, basically Kevin Spacey in
yes,
Seven.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, because Kevin Spacey's villain did this stuff for, like, you know, a couple years.
Yes.
And laid out everything leading up to the
point. It's a basketball version of
Kevin Spacey in Seven. I mean, like, everything was meticulously planned up to the point
right.
where he had the head in the box.
Right. To this person's credit, there is no head in the box at this point. There's a literal
well,
head.
We don't know when this ends.
Yeah,
we don't know that yet.
Presumably.
It depends how far he's willing to try to frame Brian Colangelo.
That would be too much. I think we could all agree. But let's start with the, like, more than likely, it seems like it's some combination of the first two.
Yes. I would be stunned if it's not
either
at this
way,
point.
And either way.
Or some family member that is yet to be, has yet to be revealed.
Right.
But somebody that is close to the Colangelos, if not with the last name of Colangelo, it feels very
Ben, unlikely. One of the clever things that Ben Diedrich did here, and you can read about it at The Ringer.
It's a true, I mean, they did their homework on this.
Oh, absolutely.
They did a lot.
Because I had a theory that Ramona shot down based on the homework thing that you're talking about. He contacted the Sixers about two of the accounts, got comment or whatever, at which point the other three, which he didn't tell them that he knew about, went dark. So by alerting the Sixers, the other three were taken essentially offline. That's
a tell.
That's suspicious.
Yeah.
And so it certainly points to one of those
first
two scenarios.
They should have realized, by the way, there's a good chance he knows about these ones too.
Either...
You lost one layer of potential plausible deniability just by doing that.
He didn't even tell the Sixers about these other accounts. The Sixers as an organization may not have known about the other three when Ben Diedrich contacted.
Yeah, but somebody that the Sixers talked to did.
Somebody, or so when they asked Brian Colangelo.
That's my point.
Right, but that's different than the rest of the organization.
Sure, okay. I'm saying somebody should have thought that through and been like, oh, they may know about all these. I better, if nothing else, let them die out. But anyway, well, I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of that.
But my point is, that was the whole
purpose. It's the
purpose,
equivalent of poker. I know.
The whole purpose.
I know. I'm saying you fell for it. It was a poker tell.
Either way, either Brian Colangelo is personally, it seems like, revealing a lot of sensitive state secrets about what's going on, the inner workings of the Sixers. A lot of well-connected Sixers writers are saying things like, here are some things that have been on background that I hadn't even heard about, like some really in-depth stuff. Or he's either doing it himself, or he's, talking about it at home, talking about it with other, like, either is bad.
Yeah, there were a theory that, like, maybe one of his kids did it, which obviously, I guess, exonerates Brian Colangelo in the sense that he didn't set up all these burner accounts. But the flip side is...
Well, that means he's telling Jaleel Okafor's
medical history to his
kids.
It's like my take on D'Angelo Russell and Nick Young with the Iggy thing. I'm like, what are you telling D'Angelo Russell, who at that point was a 19-year-old that you knew for like 3 months? Like, what are you telling him this stuff for? That's on you, Nick.
So... all this stuff is bad. I mean, people are talking about it. Like, one of the questions that people are asking, and Woj tweeted this out, like, one of the things people are coming to his defense about is this idea of, if it is Colangelo, like, why would he put himself at risk like this? A, I don't think he ever thought people would put two and two together. But B,
why does anybody put themselves at risk for anything?
This is the one part of it that makes perfect sense to me, Andy, is that the thing about Twitter in this way is it allows somebody who is consistently under social media attack, as Brian Colangelo is, certain things fair, certain things unfair. The Fultz trade clearly looks like it was a mistake. On the other hand, they did some good stuff at the deadline this year with Ilyasova, and they got Bellinelli, and those were really important acquisitions. A guy like Brian Colangelo can't say certain things. He can't leak certain things. He can't, because even if you do things on background, if a certain
there's
piece
only
of
so many people who would
correct
know
and
leaking.
Inside the organization, around the league, people can generally figure out where a piece of information came from. But if he's doing it this way, it allows him to defend himself, even if it's to no one and no one knows who it is, and that defense may or may not get out. And you could tell at least whoever's doing this was trying. Recommending beat writers go ask certain questions of certain people. At the very least, he's defending himself. I can put out the other side of the argument that is the quote unquote truth.
Okay, you know what?
I have no problem at all believing that a person who didn't think he would get caught.
Which, again, is why does anybody do anything?
And by the way, probably the odds were probably really strong that he would. I mean, if not for some, either one or a couple or some seriously obsessive followers of these, probably 95, 99% of the time, he probably would get away with something like this. I that human impulse of it, I find to be the most understandable and relatable part of this entire story. And if it's his wife, I really get it, because wives, girlfriends, whatever, tend to be even more defensive of their, you know, of their spouses. We see that all the time, whether it's, you know, what's her name? Tom Brady's.
Giselle. We've seen it with Aisha Curry.
Curry, right. You know, all these people, the crazy lady in Miami with the crazy defensive back, like that couple.
Oh, God.
Right. You freaking remember who I'm talking about.
Yes, I know exactly. Grimes. Yes, like, Mika Grimes.
Yes, like those people seemed insane.
And you know what thought, though, popped into my head? Because you're right, there are a lot of public figures who have their significant others come out in these sort of ways, whether publicly or private. Roger Goodell's wife had a burner account defending him. What the thought that popped in my head, though, was there is no way in hell my wife would ever bother defending me and my job. My wife thinks my job is too annoying and too stupid.
No, my wife would have her public Twitter account, which she has, and would use it to insult my work.
Yes.
call me an idiot.
If eggs were saying this crap about me on Twitter, my wife would, I think, secretly hope maybe it'll get bad enough that he'll find a different line of
fire
work.
And we'll do something else.
She probably is one of those
eggs. That's the one part of the story that I think people aren't giving enough credit to, which is like it's too much to risk. No, it's not. Because he didn't think he would get, and the psychology of it is makes so much sense to me.
Look at the stuff that Roseanne was tweeting under her name, thinking that she wasn't going to face any type of repercussions.
Right. But you think about in your relationships, well, all the things that you wish you could just either say, or, you know, you come home and, not that this would ever happen to you or me, but you come home and you've apparently done something wrong. And you don't think you did it wrong, Andy. Mm. You don't think you did the laundry or put the things in the dishwasher or maybe, you know, clean the kitchen in the wrong way. You thought maybe you were helping out and doing something nice. If this all sounds too personal.
It's all hypothetical.
Hypothetically.
Yes.
Would never happen in my house.
No.
Like, think of all the, but like all the things that you wish you could say to defend yourself, but you can't, you don't, because it's just, context makes it so it's either not worth the battle or whatever it is. Now picture your job as something where it's constant. It's a barrage of, like, when I leave the house, if my wife was upset about how I did X, Y, and Z, and I think it's unfair, I show up to the studio, you know, Bergman doesn't get on me about how I did the laundry. Amanda doesn't do it. And so it's like I can leave that behind. But like there's nowhere Colangelo can go short of staying off of social media, which would be the smart thing, but is difficult to do. You know, it's hard to ignore what everybody's saying about you, particularly when narrative impacts the way you can do
your
job.
And particularly, too, when and this definitely plays a role in it. When you're Brian Colangelo and you are part of modern basketball royalty, and your dad is a legend, you know, and you've run multiple front offices, you've got connections to the Olympics, and you're not like a made man the way your dad is, but you're a part of all this, and you're right now in a great situation, but this incident though speaks to the insecurity that you're still going to feel when that run, you know, the 7 seconds or less run in Phoenix, all the credit goes to either Mike D'Antoni or Steve Nash. Nobody ever talks about the way you constructed the roster. In Toronto, they're going under this, you know, they've had the best 3 or 4 seasons of franchise history. And everybody talks about Masai and nobody ever talks
Dwayne
about
Casey
you.
Now
all you ever hear about is trust the process. Your star player won't shut up about Sam Hinkie. And it's clear that, you know, all these people that were there before you still worship at the altar of Sam Hinkie. Basketball Twitter, you know, NBA writers, everybody is rooting for the Sixers to be great, not because they want the Sixers to be great necessarily.
They want the process to work.
Right. They want Hinkie to be validated. So you have, even as a member of basketball royalty, even knowing that if you lost this job, you'd find another one in 5 seconds. I mean, your family is so connected. The league actually brought your dad in to this organization. You still have insecurity and rabbit ears that lead to either you or your wife or maybe both setting up burner accounts to yell at eggs.
I get it. I completely get it. And it's the most humanizing aspect of all this. And then, but the question becomes, like, what happens? I mean, LeBron James, Vegas thought at least, was the that was the odds-on favorite destination. He can't possibly go there if Colangelo is still working there. I mean, there's a lot to unpack. I mean, honestly, it matters more what, like, Embiid, Fultz, all these other guys who are already on the roster. But for the Lakers' perspective, you know, is a free agent going to go there if he thinks that's the guy who's running the show?
Here's the thing.
He won't be there.
Unless Brian Colangelo is definitively proven as not having been involved with this in any way at all,
he's going to be fired.
He's going to be fired. And you know what? You can make the argument, because you said the third scenario isn't bad for Brian Colangelo. I actually think it is.
The one where somebody has been impersonating him?
Right, because it's got to be, or let me put it this way, it's potentially bad. And the reason I think it is because it's somebody that obviously was connected to the Sixers. I mean, you just wouldn't know all of this stuff unless you had some type of...
lack of institutional control.
Lack of institutional control, but also, do you know how, A, loose-lipped, and B, how much of an a-hole you have to be that somebody would set up this type of long con to eventually destroy your career? It says something about you if somebody would actually go through this type of efforting.
It does, but at least you weren't directly responsible.
But it makes you think twice if you're the Sixers about, okay, is this really the guy that we run?
Yeah.
He ain't Jerry. You know what I'm saying? Like, even that, I think, isn't good if you're Brian Colangelo, because it does speak to
who the guy is. The opportunity to bring his own GM.
Yeah, but, I mean,
David Griffin's still out there.
David Griffin is still out there. But
I floated this, the conspiracy theory to Ramona about the, like, they broke this purposely at this point so that Colangelo would get fired at a time where LeBron could then bring in his own guy. And she pointed out, A, the Ringer's been on this for months, to which I replied, that's probably true. It's hard to do all this reporting in 36 hours. And also, LeBron doesn't care about his GM. LeBron is the GM.
Right. I mean,
if
we're willing to believe...
I liked my conspiracy theory.
If we're willing to believe that LeBron could stay with the Cavs despite having an owner that he's never going to have a ton of respect for, I think he could theoretically play for Brian Colangelo. But again, I think it's a moot point, because if it is in any way demonstrated that he is a part of this,
well,
you got to
can him, because you can't have your star players
right
like that. I mean,
he may be gone anyway, but right. He is definitely going to be gone if he's a part
of this.
And
I'm sure, look, every GM, Truth Serum, Jerry West, and we probably don't even need to with Jerry West, he'll say it, but, Mitch Kupchak, all these guys, cursed out Kobe in private all the time, cursed him out on background all the time, but it never would have ever been connected in the same way that something like this would be, in such a chicken bleep kind of way, too, where you're doing it in this passive aggressive Twitter. Just not going to work.
Part of being a public figure of any kind with an entity that people care about, and that would be being a general manager of a popular professional sports team, is sometimes you just got to eat it. Sometimes you just have to eat it, and people are going to say stuff about you, and you just have to deal with it. And that's the end of it. You can't fight back.
So we'll see how this one goes. Did this really swoop in? We got there's a great list of the strangest stories of the 2017-2018 basketball
season.
It
has been a nutty year.
It's been a crazy year. Well, if we can get to it, I want to talk about this that Jared Dubin put out. And it was on his Twitter feed, and I think it was turned into a Slate story. Or the other way around, I'm not sure. But either way, like, this swooped in right at the end and took the top spot for what everybody thought was a really predictable and boring season, because we did end up, in the end, with the exact same finals and basically the same semifinals as we all thought we were going to get. So people are like, oh, the NBA is too predictable and too boring. This list goes to show you that it is not. And this jumped in right at the end to be the strangest story of the season. I don't think there's any question. But from Colangelo, we can get to LeAngelo.
Nice.
Later on, we will discuss the catalog of D'Angelo.
It's pretty good. Limited, unfortunately,
limited,
but it's
right.
Good.
LeAngelo Ball was in El Segundo this week talking, working out for the Lakers. Apparently, as Ramona put out on Twitter, the reaction was he tried hard. Shot the ball, seemed to do fine, you know.
You really don't want to hear if you're LiAngelo. He didn't really try.
I was trying really hard.
kind of phoned the thing in.
Right, he went in, he did his best and all that stuff. He's not going to be on the Lakers. He's not going to be on the G League team.
No.
He's not going to be on the Summer League team.
No. I don't think he's going to be any part of an NBA-connected entity.
Doesn't seem like it.
No.
Any problem with bringing him in for this kind of cursory workout? Are you indulging, if you flat know that he's not, that he has zero prospects for being on your team, is there any danger in indulging the Ball family fantasy in bringing him in?
No, because if it stops here, I don't have an issue with it. I mean, the Lakers are not the only NBA team that are giving him a workout.
Yeah,
the Warriors, led by noted LeVar Ball enthusiast Steve Kerr, they're giving him a workout. So I think indulging him is, okay, let's give him a spot on the Summer League team. That's when you're starting to get into true enabling territory with LeVar and, you know, start really raising the question of, okay, how much is this guy actually influencing the front office? I think giving him a workout, if for no other reason than so LeVar can't claim you didn't or complain about it, I don't have a problem with
it. And people have to understand, the vast majority of people, the Lakers, particularly based on the way the Lakers like to do their workouts, which is 2-on-2, 3-on-3, as much live basketball as they can fit in, you need a certain amount of numbers to make that work. And, you know, you can only bring in the guys who might be potential first-round picks so many times. You don't really, you know, you get one crack at those guys. They have a second-round pick, but if you need 6 or 7 guys per workout to do what you want to do, you're going to get to prospect 120, 125, whatever it might be, every once in a while. You bring somebody in, there's no harm, I agree. And it's not negatively impact. It's not like they're bringing LiAngelo in instead of this other guy.
Right. The other
or
thing,
that they're obligated
the other thing
to do
too,
with
bringing
with
in, I mean, because like you said, they're going to bring in tons of people, most
who
of whom
have zero chance of
right.
making the team.
But on the, but in any normal situation, you know, let's just say Lonzo had a normal father and had two brothers, you know, who are NBA prospects, just like his life now, just picture with a normal dad. If LiAngelo got a look under those circumstances, nobody would think twice about it. You know, you would think it's actually great politicking. And what you don't want to actually do is ultimately punish LiAngelo for his dad. Like, because under normal...
You can leave that to his dad.
Right, but you know what I'm saying? Like, his dad's going to do enough damage for him as it is.
Exactly.
Like, you don't want to punish LiAngelo because of who his dad is in a situation where otherwise you'd be perfectly willing to do Laker player X a solid.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, and he's, you know, he's not going to make the team. And I will say this. He's really short.
Yes, he is. And I mean, we all picked up on this.
He's not 6'5".
No.
And this is part of the, I
don't
think, going to be
people like,
well,
he just got measured. I don't care.
I mean,
those things lie
all the
time.
He might be 6'5", in shoes, maybe.
How many shoes?
Right.
how many wearing?
The lifting and all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, man, he looked like an awfully solid. If, you know, granted, stocky guys look shorter. But he didn't look 6'5".
Well, but we were also, too, we were looking at him, you know, he was standing next to Mike Bresnahan, you know, who covers the team for Spectrum. And Brez is, I think, 6'2", 6'3". And they were
basically the same size.
They were basically the same size. Like, I asked Chris McGee, I actually texted Chris McGee after that, asking him how tall he is, because Geeter's a pretty tall guy.
Former volleyball player.
Yeah, and Geeter's 6'3". LiAngelo does not look taller than Chris McGee. Or, like, Not by
any appreciable amount.
Or, I mean, you know, just by comparison, you know, the eyeball test, Kobe was 6'6". LiAngelo's not an inch shorter than Kobe. I'm not buying it. So he's sort of like a tweener guard with no guard skills, apparently.
Yeah, I'm interested to see. I mean, he can shoot. I said this because I came on with Mason in Ireland that afternoon following the workout. And I did say this. If I had to, based on what we saw, if I had to pick one ball to make a three-pointer, I might choose LiAngelo over Lonzo.
Well, unless it's from 55 feet, in which case you want LaMelo.
LaMelo, right.
Sort of his shot.
But, like, they asked me, like, how did he shoot? Like, you know, and I was like a normal person. Like, LiAngelo
yes.
shoots the ball like a normal
yes.
person. He does not have the weird Lonzo shot.
No.
So at the very least, you feel more confident that the ball is going to go in.
I mean, that's apparently his game. Like, that's apparently what he does best. I was thinking about this, though, but, you know, because there are a lot of people who freaked out about him just getting this workout. You know, does this mean he's going to be on the G League team, Summer League team? And, again, it's not going to happen. LeVar effed this up in the sense of he should have had LiAngelo go straight to the G League last year when the Lakers were still in Lonzo is transcendent, face of the organization mode, don't break all of Magic's records mode. Like, he might have been able to force LiAngelo on team last year.
Not a prayer.
I think the chances were better.
Also, too, there wasn't enough time. Are you talking about after he got kicked out of UCLA?
No, before. But I'm saying he should have just
skipped UCLA
just
entirely.
Just skipped UCLA altogether.
Were 18-year-olds allowed to go that? Okay, so
yes.
Last year was the first year of that?
Yeah, you got to do this thing while you've got all the leverage.
Maybe.
You
know, Lakers, the Lakers G League team wasn't going to pick him up.
Maybe. I think there was more of a chance.
Not
there's
a prayer.
More of a chance than
Not
now.
Not a prayer. Not a prayer.
I don't know.
The reason he ended up in Lithuania after that was because there was zero interest in it.
Right, but that's also after that. I'm saying before all this, when you're at prime.
Not a prayer.
Are at prime Lonzo ass-kissing mode.
Not a prayer.
But before LeVar had become a pain in the ass, that's when you should have done it.
Showed up as a pain in the ass.
But he became a bigger one as the season went along.
I get what you're getting at.
I'm saying.
I think you are 100% wrong.
Got to leverage it, man.
Never would have worked. All right, so we put out on the Twitter that we were recording, and I wanted to see if anybody had any questions.
Yeah.
There were some interesting ones.
Yep. Where do you want to start?
Let's start here. Mitch Adams Fisher asks this question. I have an extremely weird question that I've been wanting to ask. Do you guys have any hand signals or nonverbal communication you use when recording? Like, if one of you is starting to interrupt the other, do you ever just, like, hold up your hand and be like, hold on a second? Sometimes, Mitch. Yes.
Yeah, the hand signal that I think we use the most is when we're interviewing somebody, our hand signal for I've got a follow-up, which is basically just like...
Like a little bit more.
Right, you're doing the hand signal for like...
Fingers are a little, inch or two apart.
Exactly.
Got a little bit more. Hold on. Or like we'll look at each other like, oh, let me ask a question. Oh, I have another question. Or who's going to figure out to ask the next question? But there is not a lot of elaborate... Like, if you're picturing something like flags being waved or things like that to land an airplane, it's nothing that complicated.
Next one from Ron Pasillas. Will Top Gun 2 be campy or not?
My fear is it won't be campy enough. Because the only way Top Gun 2 works is if it understands what the lasting appeal of the first one was, which is a certain degree of campiness. I gotta figure they'll at least not at it, but...
I mean, like, how far do you go with the camp? Like, do you recreate the volleyball scene? Like, down to the jeans?
That's pretty damn campy.
Well, it wasn't intentionally campy.
No, it is now, though.
Oh, it's way campy now.
But everything, like, you know, down to Val Kilmer's, you know, bite thing. You know, all of it's campy.
There was a lot, but it was not intentionally campy at all.
It doesn't matter. It's all what people think of it now when you go back and look at it. When people think of Top Gun, that stuff colors what they think about
but
the movie.
But here's the thing, though. And maybe my impression of this is too affected by spending so much time around Michael Thompson and Mike Trudell, who absolutely worship at the altar of Top Gun. I'm not sure how many people find the stuff we find campy actually campy.
Possible.
There are a lot. I mean, there are people really excited about Top Gun 2, and it's not in an ironic way. They are genuinely excited about this. Like, Tom Cruise tweeted out some photo. I guess they're starting the shooting today. People were excited. I mean, like, I'm not a big Top Gun fan. Like, I've never thought it was that great of a movie. Like, and I'm much more into car chases than airplane chases or like airplane stunt work. I love car chases. I'll watch a car chase all day. So I'm probably not the right guy to ask. I feel like the movie was campy from the beginning. It just wasn't trying to be. It's just these type
the music,
of sequels.
All of it.
These type of sequels with rare exceptions, you know, when you're talking about 30-something years passing, they rarely work out. I mean, there are exceptions. Like, I actually thought Trainspotting 2 was actually pretty good. I thought it was a pretty good movie. But by and large, the more time that passes between original and sequel, the worse it is.
From Tonya Bologna, at Santa Poco. Would you rather be able to dunk or throw a 105-mile-an-hour fastball, which will be a consistent strike? That is a reference to, I believe, Jordan Hicks on the Cardinals.
Dunk.
Here's let me add one caveat to this question because it's a good one. My ability to throw 105-mile-an-hour fastball consistently for a strike doesn't allow me to play in the major leagues in the same way that being allowed to dunk. Like, if I could dunk, that doesn't put me in the NBA. If I could do that, like, consistently, I'd be a major league baseball player, which means that. But set that aside, just to have the ability, dunking is better because you can do it in more places and have more opportunities to show it off.
Yeah.
Like, how do you don't get to show off your ability to throw 105 miles an hour in the same way. It would be really cool.
I mean, this could just
be, to throw a baseball that hard would be really cool.
I mean, it would be cool. I mean, but, and this might be the perspective of somebody who's 5'8", and just the idea of dunking is just physical impossibility. Dunking seems more awesome than throwing 105 miles an hour, even though way more people on this planet can dunk than throw 105 miles per hour. But because I'm 5'8", I think the dunking seems more mythical to me than the throwing the ball. Like, at the end of the day, once I threw a ball, I would get more bored throwing 105 miles an hour.
There's just not a lot of early. Every time I got bored by the dunking thing, I dunked again. I could go to a different gym with different people,
right,
and be like, check this out. So dunking is the clear answer to that question. Which one do you want to go to? I was going to pull one more.
Pull one more, and then I'll keep looking.
At the Nathan Mark, are the Warriors versus Cavs for the billionth time bad for the NBA? Trilogy is good, but quadrilogy. I'm telling you, the ratings won't say so.
I was going to say, based on the most recent ratings, the last three Warriors-Cavs that we've had have been some of the best ratings in, like, two decades.
I think they're basketball fantastic. Junkies are probably a little bit bored with it. But again, I'll go back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show. I don't think this version of the finals is any inherently less interesting because you have LeBron doing, like, watching, can Brad Stevens? Like, no. Ultimately, we're talking about stars and a star-driven game. And can LeBron do the most amazing thing in NBA history is a cooler thing to watch.
And then the last one I have is from at Harmon Danger. How many burner accounts do you each have, and do you share those too?
The last part of that sounds gross if you're talking about the affair kind, but if you're just talking about the basketball burners, like people who have negative things to say about the Kamenetsky brothers, and we have accounts where we type back.
Should
at them,
we share one? Should we open a burner account and share one?
Here's how we should do it. We should open a burner account of a different set of brothers.
Like the Sklars.
Right, the Sklars, or pretend we're Randy and Jason.
And funny, I actually grew up with them.
Constantly come to our defense.
You know what? You know,
and criticize major media outlets for not giving us bigger, high-paying jobs.
You know what would ultimately would be our downfall with the burner account that we share? We'd sign it. like somebody.
Ours. Instead of Randy or Jason, we'd sign
it. Well, no, I mean, the problem is you and I, you know, because like everybody on Twitter, it's all look at me. Everybody's ego-driven. Everybody, you know, sends out a tweet and is immediately excited to see how many likes or retweets it gets. So we would be too, both of us would be too ego-driven to send out what we know is an amazing tweet and without the signature.
Right. And also, too,
I'd want credit.
We're also just, we'd screw it up.
Yeah. Way too disorganized.
You're on the wrong thing. We do the Skip Bayless, where Skip Bayless's burner account under the name of Skip Bayless complimented Skip Bayless on being so awesome because he got it. He just got it wrong.
That was so awesome.
It was awesome, but it's like, again, it's one of the most, supposedly, I never met him. I don't like his work. Supposedly, Skip Bayless is a very nice person. Like, people who have worked with him say he's very nice, but like, he doesn't need to defend himself in that way. He's one of the most dominant voices in sports. He makes a ton of money.
And he makes a ton of money because he is so, I hope, purposely polarizing. So if you're being purposely polarizing, again,
Why are you looking at your Twitter mentions?
Right. Why are you bothering to see who's getting upset at yourself and defending you?
But yet, people, if they feel like they're being treated unfairly or whatever, and again, I've heard people say, no, Skip believes in what he believes. It's not a shtick, whatever. But
I really hope he's being purposely polarized.
I hope. I really do. But, you know, I get it. I get that impulse. We are hardly raked over the coals, you know, in terms of like our social media. People say stuff. I've heard people say, it's like, are they about stuff we've written or things we've said, or you guys suck. And it's like, you know, okay. Everybody thinks, you know, there's no 100% universally popular. It's like, you know, I can also look at it and say, you know what? I may not have everything that I want. I do radio at the ESPN affiliate in the second, actually, I think the largest radio market in the country. Like, they put me on their air. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And yet I'm still sometimes like, when the egg says, you suck, kind of hurts my feelings a little bit. I brush it off quickly and I don't respond and I don't internalize whatever. But I don't, I like it more when people say, you guys are great. I, you know, you're what helped me get me through my workday. I like that better than you suck. Although my favorite is, you don't get the joke. Like that guy, like I did that last week a couple times with, you know, a couple of Twitter jokes.
If we want the ultimate proof of how it doesn't matter how powerful you are, how successful you are, how rich you are, there, you know, people will check their mentions and respond. Look at our president.
Yes.
I mean, he spends a lot of time on Twitter.
He does. He checks his mentions a lot.
He checks his mentions.
You can't slide into his DMs without him knowing.
No, actually, from what I've seen, the problem is it's too easy to slide into his DMs.
Well, executive time. You know, if I had that kind of time to read my Twitter, I'm sure I would too. But I get it. So my sympathies to Brian Colangelo, at least in that way, that I think this is ultimately will turn into one of the more odd but human stories of wild self-destruction.
Doesn't mean we won't clown on
him. Oh, no, he should be made fun of.
Yes, because this is ridiculous.
Just because the same thing could happen to me were I a little more technologically savvy doesn't mean I won't make fun of him.
About you enough.
Right. Five. I don't think it would take five. Like, one would probably do it. The onslaught isn't so strong that I need five.
You would end up disconnecting your burner accounts because they wouldn't get enough action.
There's nothing to respond to.
Like, come on, people, attack me. Bring it. Bring it.
All right, so by next week, I feel like the finals could be over. I don't know if that's technically true, but it feels
like. Depends a lot on when we record next.
Yeah. But we can start getting into Laker stuff, free agency, because we'll have a better idea of where things are going, who they might be drafting. We'll get into some of these what the Lakers should be doing questions. But I can't think of anything else.
Nope.
We'll tweet out this Jared Dubin story because it's really funny. And it will remind you that this league is the best league because even though the answer that we all knew was coming actually came, it was still a fascinating season.
No league is more entertaining. God bless the NBA.
Yep. So, all right. We'll see everybody next time.